Alright, welcome to the State of Games. I'm Dice Hate Me.
And I'm Monkey238.
And this is episode 37, or as we like to call it, the What About the Ghost Fleet and the Haunted Dungeon.
Ooh, that sounds spooky.
Yeah, well, it is that time of year, Monkey. And we like spooky stuff, right?
Yeah, we do. Well, last year we spent the whole podcast talking about our favorite spooky games. This year we wanted to highlight the spooky, but do it a little differently. So we decided to ask our four interviewees on this podcast about their favorite spooky games.
That's a great idea.
I know, right? I have a few sometimes. So, yeah, looks like we'll be having a big show since we're talking to four people tonight. First, we're talking with Matt Riddle and Ben Pinchback, the designers of the Kickstarter game hit Fleet. Yeah, we like that game.
A little bit.
Just a little.
Just a little.
Then we'll spend a few minutes talking to Patrick Nickel and Michael Coe about Dungeon Heroes and the future plans for Crash Games.
That's a lot of talking.
Yeah, you do a lot of talking.
You do a lot of
you
talking.
You do a lot of talking. Hopefully, you're the talker.
Hopefully our interviewees will do a lot of talking.
You're the talker.
So, you ready to get your spook on?
Yeah.
Just, yeah?
Yeah!
It's Halloween!
Yeah! Boo!
All right. Well, we're really excited about our guests on this episode, partly because they designed one of our favorite games, and partly because they're just really great guys. We'd like to welcome Matt Riddle and Ben Pinchback to the show.
Welcome.
How's it going? Hey, guys.
It's great to have you.
Thanks. We're really, really happy to be here.
Glad yeah, it's about time.
Sorry, I missed that.
I said it's about time.
Yeah, I know. I remember mentioning it to Chris when I first talked to him at Origins, which was what? June, May, when I didn't know who you guys were. And then, we were obviously of no consequence back then. And not that we are of any consequence now, but still. And I'm like, hey, I would love to talk to you guys because, we got turned on to your podcast. And, it's awesome. We couldn't be more excited to be talking to you guys now. So,
well, we're excited to be talking to you guys. So we'll just go ahead and get out of the way. The whole world pretty much knows you guys designed Fleet, but just in case they don't know, everyone out there listening, these guys designed Fleet. So there we go.
Woo! Fleet. Yeah.
Fleet. Right. We haven't been really shy about saying how much we've really enjoyed Fleet. And when you guys sent it to us to review during your campaign, T.C. Petty III was here with us, and he played it with us the first time we played it, and he didn't know what to make of it when we first got it. He was a little nervous about it, and then after he played, he loved it as much as we did. So we just think that you put together a great game, and I know I've told you guys this a million times, and we'll say it again live on the podcast. Fleet is a fantastic game. People out there, if you've not played it yet, play Fleet.
Thank you very much. We've been really happy with the response so far. I think the thing that is really cool is, you put the age on the box and you guess and whatever and how young it can go. And we've had just a tremendous response of families, that play it and guys playing it with their sons and daughters and stuff. And I'm just really impressed at, everybody that's been able to enjoy it.
Yeah, that is a pretty neat experience. Actually, real quick, speaking of TC, I love that guy. He posts in the forums on, he answers questions before we can get there. And cause it's kind of cool to have somebody else, because we hate to come in. I love being at BGG and talking to the people, even people that don't like it. It's fun just to be on there. And as you mentioned, it's been, you guys were awesome, and you're one of the first guys, Chris, to say how much you liked it. And that's really, it was a huge boost to us to have somebody that was already in the industry that, and you are, you're in the industry, and, you're a name, people know who you are, and the fact that you supported it was awesome because it really gave it a little bit of credibility early on. No one knew what it was.
It was really huge, actually.
And that was awesome. And even, I told you the story, Chris, privately, and I'm going to mention it very quickly just to kind of, relate it to anyone listening, how awesome you are. even the guys at the distributor, who we had nothing to do with, these are just the guys that Griffin deals with, they were excited about Fleet because they were excited after reading, some of the things that you'd written about it. So that was really awesome. So, thanks.
Cool.
Yeah, when you told me that story at Gen Con, I was like, what?
It's 100%.
Yeah, people are listening.
That's flattering, and I appreciate you telling me that. That's exciting to hear, too. We want you guys to get all that good press. We want the good vibes out there to people to understand that they should play Fleet. Now, what were you going to ask a question?
Oh, yeah, you mentioned about the age. Did you have a target age in mind when you designed the game, or did you know? Are you just glad that more people can play it than perhaps you thought?
You know, our target age, as far as how low we can go, we got a really good friend that's got a really smart kid, and he must be, what, 7 or 8?
Nine.
Yeah, he can play all the games, like Dominion, and, I mean, you know, Through the Desert. He'll play anything. And, you know, he could pick it up and play it, but we're like, you know, that might not be the baseline. He's a pretty, you know, high-speed pickup on all these games. But, you know, we just get all these messages of people, you know, I don't, what did we put in the box, 10 or 12 for
10?
For safety testing reasons or something, but
right.
You think we know it's either 10 or 12.
Yeah, but honestly, I'm actually a little surprised. I mean, kids are a lot smarter than I give them credit for.
Yeah, they really are, and there's some out there that are just super sharp that pick things up, and so age testing is tough, and it's also a little bit still, there's still a little bit of vagaries on putting ages on boxes. For the most part, we still stick with 13 and up, even though a lot of our games will skew younger, simply because we don't want to run into trouble with testing. So you have to always have tests. Absolutely. If you're going to market to 12 and under.
You might be right about that, Chris. We might say 13 and up, and probably for that reason. That's obviously something Griffin probably kind of chose for us.
Yeah, but from your perspective, I mean, Carnival plays amazing with the family, and obviously well under 13 is going to have that, you know, a lot of fun with that one. So you do what you got to do for the official reasons. But
right, but you hope people figure out that they can actually try and play it.
Yeah, and that's what we're trying to do with what we're doing on the website as far as, like, our categories of games. We say, like, the Monkey line, which is Carnival and Heartland Hauling, they can play from about ages 8 and up. And then
right.
The Rooster line's about 10 and up, and then Viva Java's about 12 and up, which is the Tiger line, things like that. So it's tough, but, you know, it's good to hear that, you know, Fleet's out there and reaching families and people are able to play it, especially, you know, younger players, because that's, I think, is really capturing a good audience with family members.
Yeah, so now that it's out in the wild, how do you think delivery and reception has been so far?
It's been great. I mean, there's been... You know, we weren't sure, right? We were really excited to kind of watch how the, you know, people always say that they don't, but I guess you hear people that have things and they, oh, I don't read the press. Well, I read the press every single day. I go to the Fleet page every morning and every night, and so does Ben, and I refresh the geek list and I refresh the forums, and I've subscribed to every thread and every piece of that page. And every time I pick up my phone, you know, at work, I want to see a little red number that means that somebody posted something. And, you know, it's a balance between, you know, being, we don't want to be like the overbearing either, but, you know, I love that people talk about it. You know, we have the first time someone posted like a legitimate strategy question that clearly meant that they'd played the game and they kind of ingested the game and they actually thought about it was awesome. I mean,
yeah, going back to how cool TC is, there's this one thread and, you know, me and Matt decided to lay back and not get into strategy discussions because, you know, it's fun to, as a player, just figure the game out without the designer coming in overbearing. And there was this early swell, oh, Processing Vessel is too good, can't win without it, this and that. Well, one of these threads, I'm pretty sure it was TC, jumped in with, like, the 100% perfect answer,
right.
Like, just like I would have said it. You know, hey, why don't you wait a turn? If you buy tuna, maybe not launch, save your money, and, you know, this and that, and it's just amazing to watch people that have just played the game without our influence and just completely get it like that.
Right.
So that part's been the coolest for me.
No, that has been awesome. And I think overall, too, I mean, you know, ratings aren't everything, but, I mean, it's been nice to see. It's been doing pretty well, you know, with a good rating sample, and it's been mostly positive. We had some hiccups with shipping, which I think that's just logistics, right? And somebody's always going to be mad. And unfortunately, Lithium Mercs, we had a big Canada lag. So we had a lot of angry Canucks, pick off a hosers and such, you know, yelling at us. And
well, I'd be mad too. It's just a logistic problem. When somebody in Australia is getting it, and you're just north of the border waiting. I mean,
you're in Vancouver, and you can see Seattle.
Just,
I mean,
you know, it's stuff happens.
Yeah, and that happens, right? Whenever you send a large quantity of boxes in the mail, unfortunately for those, and we felt bad because, you know, there's nothing we could do for them, and they had a legitimate reason to be angry. You know, so we kind of, luckily those, it looks like they've all pretty much trickled in now, so I think we're pretty good there.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, well, we're right still in the thick of it with Viva Java right now, and most of them have gone out and gotten delivered where they need to go, but we're still dealing with some of those packages that are straggling that aren't getting where they need to be, and it's a nightmare, but once it's in everybody's hands, you know, like the way Fleet was, and people start really playing and getting into it, it was exciting for me just to see, like, when I went to this grand opening of our local store, and Sean Kirkham had brought his copy of Fleet over, and I got to watch him play for the first time with three other new people playing, and I'm just standing there kind of just watching the whole thing, trying to keep my mouth shut as long as I possibly could, you know. But they all kept turning to me and said, well, what should I do here? And I would be like, well, you really want to know? And, you know, so, but it was a lot of fun. I was almost excited to see it hit the table as I was to see Viva Java out there in the wild. But
and for the record, you That's can awesome. Win without the processing vessel. Chris actually beat me by a couple of points the other night.
That's exactly.
We're kind of waiting for the other licenses to be too powerful. Now we'll probably go through them all before it's all said and done.
Right.
I personally think that Lobster is too strong.
Well,
no, I'm just kidding, guys.
To be honest, me and Matt really like Lobster.
Yeah. I love Lobster. Lobster is my new favorite license. I love it.
I don't have a favorite, but if I did, it would be Lobster.
That's a good diplomatic answer.
Yeah.
All right, so you got. We thought that the production quality of it turned out really great. I mean, Eagle and Griffin had really cranked up the quality on a lot of their games in the past couple of years. So you guys are happy with how it all turned out?
Oh, go ahead. Yeah, absolutely. I was going to say, I'm sitting there in my basement looking at For Sale on the shelf, and that was kind of the moment I knew we were going to get an awesome product was, you know, we had pinged every company we could think of, and when we ended up with Griffin, I'm looking at all the games I already owned and the ones by Griffin, and I looked at the cards in For Sale, and I was thinking, maybe we'll get these cards, you know? And then we ended up with very similar, you know, textured, thick cards, and they really do an amazing job with the production quality.
Yeah.
We couldn't be happier with that.
That, I mean, you never know how much, it's hard to quantify exactly where that line between gameplay and art and production lies, right? I mean, theoretically, you know, Ben and I always like to say, you know, hey, we got Fleet published, so to speak, with, you know, sticky paper and tape and dice, you know, and poker cards. You know, there wasn't any art. It was just an idea. And we love our game, obviously. We wouldn't have tried to get it published. But, you know, a lot of people are going to ignore it if they don't think it looks good. So the process of going through the art, you know, we had some bumps and we had some things that went really well. And then there's, you know, we changed hands and ended up with Eric J. Carter, and he just killed it. I mean, just crushed it. And I just, you know, you don't know how important that is. I mean, you guys do, but, you know, it's hard to say would it have done okay if it had crappier art. It probably might have done okay. People might have figured out it was a good game still. But the fact that the art was good and the production was good and it's a pretty box. People are actually, look, I'm American. I'm a big guy. I like big, huge, heavy boxes. But Griffin's been getting praised because Fleet fits in the box. And the box is of a good size. And it can go in, you know, can go in a bag and go on a shelf. So it's awesome. It was awesome.
Yeah, and we have that same kind of philosophy. I mean, if we've had some people who wanted bigger boxes or talk about making bigger boxes, but we're very much of the mindset that you should design the box to fit your game, and Eagle and Griffin have really done that, you know, especially with the Bookshelf series and now with the new kind of their hybrid Kickstarter series boxes. And then Fleet's perfect. It fits perfectly in there, and I thought they did a really, really good job with it. So
great.
You had mentioned a little bit about going back and talking about where the origins of Fleet was coming from. What? Sherilyn?
That was a really broken sentence.
That was a very broken sentence.
I didn't know where that was
no
going.
No comments from the peanut gallery. Thank you very much.
You back step. Before.
The origins are basically, I was driving into work one day thinking about, I think in our designer diary, we call it. It all started with Emperor Palpatine. That's a Race for the Galaxy mention about. Have you played Race for the Galaxy a lot with that six cost card or whatever? The guy sitting on the throne, the military power guy.
Yeah, well, we played Race for the Galaxy quite a bit, actually. Well, I introduced Monkey to it, and she didn't really. It didn't really tickle her fancy. We want to revisit it now because she's a more advanced player.
Yeah, that was one of the first games you taught me.
So. Hey,
yeah.
Hey, Monkey, a lot of words on cards, Monkey.
Yeah.
There are a lot of icons on that one also.
That was true. That's icons on cards, but yeah.
We're playing it a lot, and basically we'd be within a couple points, and whoever drew the big six card they needed, or whoever happened to be hanging on to it at the end, would get this big sweep of points and seem to win. And we just started listing the things, you know, that we would do if we made a game. So one day driving into work, I had a few ideas, and I never asked Matt if he was interested. I just told him, hey, we're designing a game now, and this is what I got. And then he's like, of course, we waited till lunch. Went offsite to talk about it. kind of went from there.
Well, what's your story? How long have you guys been together?
hetero life mates.
I'm tracking what you're saying. yes, Ben's wife. Hold on. I've known Ben since, gosh, I think I'm a couple years older. We went to the same church growing up in the same school system, but I was far enough ahead that I knew him more from church. I was kind of in between him and his older brother. So, gosh, since I was 15, he was 12, probably.
We know each other almost two-thirds our life.
Right, wow. Basically, yeah.
I mean, and then this gaming renaissance we've been in is only about 6-8 years old. We started with Settlers, and we each own 50 games.
Right.
I guess it was 3 or 4 years ago now, maybe 3 years ago, we just decided to give it a shot and try to design one.
Cool.
Right, here we are.
That's awesome. All right, so we covered some of the basic origins of the game, and we talked a little bit about how you guys have been together for so long. Now, we have to ask one hard-hitting question.
Cool.
We've already talked about how much we love the game, so take this with a grain of salt, but the only issue we've ever had with Fleet, it comes in the two-player game. And we've talked about this before, both at Origins Gen Con and just behind the scenes and whatnot. We know that the auction, one of the core mechanics of the game, suffers just a little bit in the two-player game. It doesn't change the core mechanic of the game in the feel that we get with the overall aspect of the game. But have you had any, since it's come out, have you had any people come up to you with variants or any sort of a game changer for the two-player aspect?
I think we've had people kind of agree with that. And it sort of goes two different directions. We actually had, Richard Hamm did a review for us, a walkthrough, and he seemed to really enjoy the game, but, you know, did say his issue was more along the lines of that it played very smoothly, but that he wasn't sure, you know, if the auction worked, but it kind of did for him. But then we've had other people say, hey, look, the auction almost plays itself, you know, and then, I guess I'm not really answering your question, but we've heard that. I don't think it's a completely fair question. I mean, I do think you picked it up when you said that there's only so much an auction can do with two players. So the game has to become more about posturing in the auction than it is actually the auction itself, right? Because you could go through an entire game of two-player Fleet and just take what's given to you and probably have a nice engine. And you're going to get a good score. Another player's going to get a good score. In that case, the game's going to have more happen to you than you happen to the game. So
I was just going to say, Joel from Drive-Thru, I think he picked up on one thing that I was really excited for him to pick up on, it that two-player can be really devious. And it becomes a little less about getting something that helps you, and it's more important to do the posturing and the denial of the opponent more so in a 3 or 4 player game. So, you know, you're looking at your opponent's tableau, and you're almost really trying to stick him with, you know, what's worse for him versus what's me, and there's that posturing. And then with only 3 bigs in the 2-player game, you're really just trying to maneuver the entire game to win that big count, you know, 2-1 or 1-0 if there's a wipe away. So it does take on a much different flavor, and I think it's almost more interactive. That might not make any sense because there might be less bidding up in the auction originally, but I think you have to pay attention to your opponent even more so in 2-player, or else, you know, you're going to get caught in just doing what you think is good for you, and you might miss that they're running away and you should have prevented them from, you know, getting that cod or that lobster or something like that.
Yeah, and I will say that the more we've played the game and the more experienced players that we've become with Fleet, we feel more comfortable playing the two-player game, knowing how the mechanics are going to work together, knowing the ebb and flow of the auction. So it becomes a much more robust experience playing the game when you have more experience playing the game overall. So we will say that for sure. One thing that we did agree when we played, we actually played this past weekend for our 2-year anniversary. We went to Norfolk. And one thing that Cheryl and I were, we were discussing after we had played, and I felt that the auction was, it felt actually, I felt comfortable in the auction with the 2-player game. But one thing that we mentioned was we want to try it again where we actually know the bigs that are going to be in the game. You know, with the 2-player game, you have to remove half of the big licenses. The guilds, so to speak. One thing that we thought was we would still randomize it, but we would let each other, we would both look at what is actually going to be in the game so that we can be prepared for, like, later on in the game, if all of a sudden, for whatever reason, there are only, you know, 3 pubs in the game versus, you know, 2 king crabs in a pub, then we can kind of plan for the long haul strategy, and, you know, whether we're going to keep some of our money in reserve to get those. We thought it might make an interesting variant for us to just know, not necessarily when they're going to come up, but which ones will be coming up during the game.
Yeah, because I had an interesting, I don't want to say that I was frustrated, but in my mind, I guess I was just hoping that a certain one would come up, and one of the guild ones, and not just, you know, the 10 points. So I made a point of trying to get one of every license, because I felt like I needed to strive for something. And then at the end, it was just kind of a letdown because I was just waiting and waiting and waiting. So I had enough money, but I didn't buy, sorry, I'm not too familiar with the terms, but I didn't buy one of the 10 pointers because I was like, hopefully one of the king crabs will come out and sure, I'll be able to do that. So it's kind of like the whole strategy that I worked for the game was kind of in vain. You know, right. I only lost by a couple of points, so obviously...
Yeah, it was still tight.
Yeah, it didn't have a huge influence. But for me as a player, I think I would appreciate kind of a goal. So we might try that variant.
Absolutely. I mean, I can see how it could definitely give you the sense of control as well. And like you said, as you're planning towards the premium. I mean, it's only a 5-point difference, right? If you max the king crab versus the pub. Which, granted, 5 points can be a lot if the game is tight. So, but yeah, no, I mean, that's actually been, you know, kind of a quick side note on that. You know, that's not been kind of a cool thing is people are, you know, I'm not a house rules guy. I've just always been, that's my personality, I guess. And it's interesting to see other people say, hey, here's what we're doing, you know, and at first it's like, well, that's my game, play it my way. And you realize, okay, you know what, if it helps someone enjoy the game better, and like you said, you know, Sherilyn, if it's something that helps you get the idea of that, okay, I'm going to plan towards this goal, there's nothing at all wrong with
the
that.
The captain's king crab is in, so you launch an extra boat or two to try to facilitate towards that. Absolutely.
Yeah. 100%, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Now, the cool one, Matt messaged me today, one of the awesome guys on the board that's really enjoying the game. Actually, he made the tuck boxes. I can't think of his name right ahead.
Enoch?
But,
I don't know how to say it.
Thank you very much for the awesome tuck boxes. They're phenomenal.
Just incredible tuck boxes.
I think he messaged Matt. They play 3-player, and they don't remove any licenses or fish.
Right.
So he messaged Matt saying, hey, we ran out of boat cards.
Oh, wow.
And Matt's telling me, and all I responded was, that's awesome.
Right. Like, he's like, what should we do? I'm like, I don't know, because we didn't really design for that.
But it's really awesome.
But it's great, man. You know, I'm like, yeah, I guess you could pull all your captains out, you know, once you know it's a captain boat.
Or buy another one.
Or buy it, right, yeah. I mean, he's like, well, we're talking about buying another fleet and just putting all the boat cards in. I'm like, okay, that's fine, too.
Actually, our last play just testifies how well-balanced the game is, because it did end because we ran out of fish. But the next turn, we would have run out of licenses.
No, awesome. We had that question come up with about the length. You know, people have not complained about the length, but said, listen, the game is short. And I think it's short for a couple of reasons. One is because it's all open information. So we want you to be able to build your engine, work against other players, but it's got to end. Because at some point, people are going to begin to, their engine's going to be working better, and it's just going to kind of go.
Yeah.
So we had the game design first, like Ben kind of mentioned, that we had these ideas and how the cards were going to work. And Ben had this list of, I guess you can call them powers, and here's how the cards are going to go together. And the balancing was really, like you said, getting the fish count right and getting the, you know, 100 seems inane, like we just pulled out of a hat. But it wasn't. I mean, there was some actual, you know, study there, right? And if it was 42 fish, you're going to grind up to 50. You know what I mean? So it was kind of cool that we sat there and figured out, okay, we want the game to be about the same for licenses or fish, but obviously the in-game variants, one game might be a little money heavy, one game might be captain heavy, allows the game to kind of go that route towards the end game.
Yeah, and that's the thing with 2 and 3 player setup, is that was some of the hardest work we had to do, was optimize the game so that it felt similar to the 4 player we had been playing, and with the amount of turns and whatnot. So we really worked hard to tweak in the amount of turns and, you know, how big your tableau got, and, you know, make it as similar as we could.
We did a good job.
Yeah, and it's a hard thing to do. I mean, we've worked with Jason Katarski on Heartland Hauling on doing that too, trying to figure out. You know, some people had come back and say, you get that feedback when you're doing development, where somebody will say, like, well, this game feels just a little bit too short. But then you look at the results of when they're playing, and it actually ends like a turn before they're able to do everything. And that's really what you want to have, because that brings that tension of like, well, I got to go risk versus reward here. Because if you were able to do absolutely everything in the game, then there's no challenge.
Yeah. Right. I'm really interested about Viva Java. And I think that plays up to 8. What's your low on that? Is it 3 or 4 to 8?
3 to 8, yep.
I mean, I would love to try it 3 just for the fun of it. Like, because we played it with 8.
I think you guys would like it with 3 and 4 using the interns. It's a much more of a tight Euro feel to it. Trying to utilize the interns, and that has a lot of risk versus reward, where if you take the interns, you can get special abilities, but they also hurt you because they're inept. And it's a brilliant system that TC came up with. When we were going to sign Viva Java, we issued in the challenge. Back then, it was only a 5 to 8 player game. And I told him outright, we want to sign Viva Java, but I want you to make it a 3 to 8 player game. I said it would be great if it was a 2 to 8 player game, but I said right now, understanding that it has to have at least some social in it, it needs to play down to 3. And he sat down and within like 2 weeks came up with the intern system, and then just worked and cranked like crazy on development, getting that ratchet down. And it's a fantastic system. And I like playing with the interns with 3 or 4 players. Yeah, it's tight, and I think you guys would probably enjoy it, especially with the way you've built Fleet and gotten that kind of engine mechanism really ratcheted down. So,
well, that's a huge accomplishment, because there's not a lot of games I can think of off the top of my head that, you know, really work 3 to 8, and there might be one.
Yeah, Bahanza, is that it? Is that the only game
it might be Viva Java by hands.
Yeah. No, I mean, they're even, you know, we have a lot of game nights where we have 6. And even 6 is hard. 6 is like a 3-hour Power Grid, which I love. I love Power Grid. But 3 hours of Power Grid means that's all you're playing that night. So even with 6, there's just not a lot of games. So to go to 8, and like I said, you know, like Ben mentioned, we've only played with 8 because we played we had the chance to play, you know, one of those in a TC event at Origins. And, you know, like, you know, obviously we wouldn't be talking about this if we didn't, but obviously enjoyed the game. And I would love to try it with 3 and 4, because, yeah, it's a very, like Ben said, I'm going to kind of echo him here. It's a very impressive feat to have a game that actually scales from 3 to 8.
Well, we're really proud to have it out there in people's hands now. And we just can't, it's been great feedback so far. People are having a blast with it. And we can't wait to see more reviews come in and more people start to play it. So. Anyway, no. Enough about us. We're here to talk about you guys.
Yeah. One last thing, Chris.
Sure.
You can come down whenever you want. I just want to say one more just TC. We're just gonna, we keep cards ending this.
It's like
guy.
We want to marry the
guy.
I know.
I just exchange details with him, because we had the same thing happen to him that happened to us. You know, I've been watching Viva Java, and, you know, the same way, kind of checking it out. He's like, oh, man, some guy in China gave us a 5 today. Like, how's he even playing the game? He's in China. You know, it happened at TC too, you know. You're like, oh, man. So I send him a geek mail, you know, hey, TC, I saw you got a 5 from China. You know?
Yeah, he was. We found it at the same time, and I'm like, what in the world's going on? There's no way anybody in China's playing this game. What are they doing? And
yeah.
It's just bizarre. It's like somebody at the factory where it was made, they played it, and they're like, oh, this sucks.
If you're gonna do that, at least like it. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. If you're cheating already, at least at least a 7. I'll take a 7. Come 7's on. Fine. So, all right. So, moving forward,
word on the street is that you guys are working on a Fleet expansion. What's that about?
It's awesome.
as you pat yourself on the back.
The expansion is going to be awesome, and so has been working on it. You know, it's been, 2 years since Fleet, we're done with Fleet, right?
Yeah, I think it was.
So,
yeah.
You know, with Fleet, we were just so hyper-dedicated to it because it was our first game. We didn't know anything else. And since then, we've had some other projects we've been working on. We've got some things that are, you know, that are out there kind of, you know, we're looking for something to follow up with Griffin on. But, you know, when Fleet kickstarted successfully, and then, you know, I think I can say this because even though it's kind of the business side, it's been mentioned publicly by like Keith and stuff. You know, it sold out super fast, like at the distribution level. Like, Griffin's gone. They're done. Fleets are gone. They don't have any more. It's all out there on the street, you know, and so far, you know, I've been tracking some of the different websites and they're selling out. And so it's been going awesome. So,
where are you going with this?
So where I'm going is Ben and I had kind of arrogantly already had expansion designed partway because we thought, oh, well, of course they're going to want the expansion, right? Why wouldn't they? So, but then actually when it started going so well, we said, hey, Griffin, you know, do you want an expansion? And they said, yes, we do. So we literally just got to them a couple of weeks ago. We got the first feedback today from Sean, one of the awesome guys at Griffin, talking about how it looks pretty cool. He likes the new cards, and it's awesome. I mean,
no guarantees. They haven't signed up for it
exactly.
Officially,
yeah, they could say you guys are dumb and you know
it could be awful, but you know we have all the testing we've done so far. It's gone over really well in our circle,
right.
And then our testing group and. I don't want to say too much, but you're going to like it.
Yeah. I'm going to give you one world premiere piece of data. How about that?
Yes.
So what we're trying to do, or what we did do, is we made it so that you could scale the game between the 5 base licenses and the 2 premiums. You could just swap. So you're going to be able to take the expansion licenses and matching boat cards and like, okay, we don't want COD today. You take COD out, you put one of the new ones in, and you go. You play a couple games like that, and you put it away, and then next time you play, you might want to try something new. And you can, you know, that's pretty exciting for us. So we think we accomplished that pretty well.
That's awesome. And that's really that's one of the things that I felt about Fleet is, like, I love the game. Obviously, I've told you a million times, and I will continue to say I love this game. And what I want is just more. Like, I want more of, you know, options and switching things in and out. And so an expansion allows you to kind of, you know, try different things and different licenses and get those mechanics going differently really excites me. Sherilyn's giving me a weird look right now. I'm sorry. I love this game. What can
so do I.
Assuming it goes over okay, you know, that's the direction we'd like to take it.
Yes.
We've had a lot of fun developing. And, you know, the cool thing is, like, we're playing it at lunch, I don't know, a couple months ago with our buddies, and it's just, we're having fun. It's never a chore for us to play, and we played literally over 500 games, and
yeah.
Probably double that, if, really. We've never been bored of the game. We've just always enjoyed it, and then mixing in new ideas, it's been a blast the entire time. That's, I think, when we first knew that maybe we should formalize it and try to give it a shot, is when you play a couple hundred times and you're not bored of it, let's
right.
go, let's try it, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's obvious you guys have put a lot of work into it, and we just congratulate you on the success, and we will continue to champion it. Even though, I mean, that's an impressive feat that it sold out at the distribution level, and so congrats.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So we're going to move a little bit past Fleet now. I want to ask you guys if there's anything else you are working on. Now, I know a couple of top secret ones that we won't talk about, but anything that you can talk about or even give a hint about?
Sure. Well, the Fleet expansion is the big one. The other one I think that is, you know, I guess we'll talk about, you know, it may not ever go anywhere.
It might be good. It might not be good.
Right.
We'll see.
It's a little bit early, but we had an opportunity, and I'm going to back up and tell like a half origin story. You can cut me off because I'm long-winded. So Origins was awesome, right? This has been a nice first con and first everything. And, you know, it was really cool to meet people, and we met you guys. And so we're at like that Einstein Bagel on site at Origins one morning. And we see a guy we met before. Jeremiah Lee and his buddy Doug were really good guys. And they're from Michigan.
Ypsilanti guys.
Ypsilanti guys.
Good group over there.
So we had a chance to meet those guys before. We saw them. We talked to them for a while. We go and sit down. And we happen to sit down a table next to Will Wheaton and the other celebrity that was there, the redhead lady. I don't
know. Felicia
Day.
Yeah, her. And that was kind of cool.
I didn't recognize him. Matt
yeah, Ben.
He goes, hey, that was Felicity Day or whatever. Right.
I actually went back and watched, totally off the subject now, sorry.
Yeah, we're derailed.
I went back and watched The Guild after that because I'd never heard of it, and it's hilarious. That's it. So
the point is, hang out at Einstein Bagels at Origins, and you run into a lot of people.
So meanwhile, back at the Hall of Justice, we're at our table, and this guy sits down, and he had, here's another little side Origins thing. If you have one of those sweet vendor badges, it's like being in a club.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Like, sweet vendor badges. You're like, hey, that guy's got a sweet vendor badge. So this guy sits down, and I kind of glanced at his badge and read his name, and it was Philip Dubard, who is a super nice guy. And I didn't know that yet, but I found out minutes later. And I kind of just start making small talk with him. And
he's everywhere, by the way.
Yeah,
he's
all
got
over the place.
A lot of irons in the fire.
Yes, he does.
So we start making small talk, and he's telling us about this stuff. And this story's got a point. I'm getting there. And he starts telling us about Tempest, which is that AEG thing, right?
Right.
And I was vaguely aware of it, but I wasn't really tracking it very well. But it sounded kind of cool. So we didn't really think anything of it, and we kind of had got back from Origins, and I looked it up, and they had this little form you fill out and whatever. So the point is we had, fill out the designer thing, and I said, hey, yeah, sure, guys, come on in, So we were reading through the data, about a month, 6 weeks ago, 8 weeks ago, 2 months ago, and they had a call for a game. And it was a fast-paced, light game, and they had some things they wanted to see in it. And just literally over a couple of nights, Ben and I kind of talked about the pitch, and here's an idea that we had and kind of had anyway, based on a previous design we'd been working on, and we pitched it. Just as a, here's what our idea is. Before we go any farther and waste our time on this, are you guys at all interested? And within like 24 hours, they got back to us and said, it sounds good. We'd like to see you keep going with it. Give us a call when it's ready for playtesting. We'll test it, and if it's a go, then we'll get it in the Tempest world, and we'll give it a shot. Now we have to design the game and make it fun and make it work,
to make it good.
And make it good.
It works, but we're like our own harshest critic.
Yeah,
it's out there. It's good. We know the base of it works, but it's not done yet. We
right.
just feel like there's a wow factor, and we're gonna find it soon.
We are. We're gonna hit it. So that's probably the next. We put everything on hold for the fleet expansion, and we are trying to get something to follow up with Griffin on because those guys were awesome. And we want to work with them again. But I would say our current hot project that we're working on together is this AEG project. So, and then, our next huge project will be Dice Hate Me, of course.
Of course.
Of course.
If you guys are willing, and then we'll take it from there.
We are waiting with bated breath.
Okay. Well, we kind of break our own, not that we have rules, but we always talk about, with Fleet, we were so, like I said earlier, we were so dedicated to it. It seems like now every 5 minutes Ben has a new idea, and we take a game to like 60%, and then we put it aside, and then take 60%, we put it aside.
Well, that's what I do. That's why I brought in you.
Yeah. I'm supposed to close, and I'm not doing a good job. So we really got to kind of focus on one thing at a time and get these things farther along.
Really, you might have to pick from about 8 different ideas.
that's fine. Because you guys know if you'd brought Fleet to us first, we'd have published it in a heartbeat.
Yeah, we know. And we're going to get, we'll do, we want to work with you, so we'll figure it out.
Sweet.
Sounds great.
Well, yeah, that's pretty much, that's, we design because we like it, and it, gets us out of the house, to each other's houses once a week, and gives us something to talk about over text occasionally, and we're just going to keep rocking.
Well, good. We like to hear you guys are keeping busy. It sounds like you got a lot of great ideas and things that you're doing. I'm excited to see the development with AEG, so I'll keep my ear pressed to the ground on that one. Hopefully, you guys can keep us in the loop here, and we'll push that one through as well.
Awesome.
All right, so we're gonna step to the side a little bit and get into our overall theme for this podcast. So it's time to get a little spooky.
Yeah.
All right. Since this is our Halloween episode, we like to try to play it up for, the holidays, one of our favorite holidays. We want to know, for both of you guys, what is your favorite spooky game and why?
Got it. I'm going to go first because mine's short. I don't have one.
Because you haven't played haven't played any that you like?
Probably both. I'm a mechanics first guy. I can look past theme. I don't particularly enjoy the spooky theme. I don't know why. I don't like the movies. I don't like, never read Stephen King, all that kind of stuff. And I played Gloom and hated it.
Words on cards.
Words. There you go. Words on cards. I mean, yeah. Just picking cards and letting it happen to you.
Sherilyn, you ruined me because every time I play a game now, it's just ringing in my head. Words on cards.
Yeah.
Well, wait, hold on a second. You have to get the phrase right. It's words with cards with words.
Cards with words.
You almost messed me up.
No, I mean, I honestly think, even though I hadn't even heard it yet, you pre-ruined Smash Up for me. Which, hey, because, you know, I told the story to Chris, and listen, again, talk about AEG a second ago. We love AEG. Go AEG. I don't like Smash Up. And the reason I don't like Smash Up is because I spent 45 minutes reading size 6 font from 7 feet away.
Upside down.
Upside down.
The table.
Because every time somebody made a card with a ton of words on it, I had to read every friggin' one and figure out what it did and how it processed that stupid, whatever those things are called, the base it was on.
Those awesome
and,
things.
Yeah, how did it all interact with each other? And I couldn't stop myself. This is a fast game, and there's a card coming every 5 seconds because that's all you do. And then I had to read every single one of them, and I couldn't do it. I was just out. The point is...
was there a point?
There was
there?
No point. But
cards with words.
Cards with words.
Cards with words, yeah.
I'm going to pass to Ben. I don't have a spooky game I like. I'm a total killer buzzkill on that one.
My,
sorry.
Mine is easy, and it's obvious, Arkham Horror, but I do have a reason why. So my brother's got a bunch of really good friends out in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and we all went out for Nerd Game Fest. You know, 2012. So we spent a whole weekend with my brother and his buddies from like Thursday night to Sunday. We just played games 24/7. It was amazing. So his friends, whose house we were at, Stevie D, was really excited to play Arkham Horror one night. And this guy is an awesome musician. So what he did is put together 3 hours worth of spooky soundtrack, a mixture of like original music, but like doors closing and footsteps and spooky sounds. And like at first I thought he was kidding when he said, hey, I got a soundtrack. I'm like, oh yeah, yeah, whatever. You're going to find like Rob Zombie and we're going to play Arkham Horror. But no, he literally had 3 hours of original music that played in the background while we played Arkham Horror for 3, 4, 5 hours. And it was awesome. It totally worked. It just was the most amazing gaming experience. And I don't know why everybody was into it. It was late at night, spooky sound, soundtrack, and it was awesome. I loved it.
Well, now, I 100% back that choice.
You have an Arkham soundtrack.
I have two of them.
Oh, I've only heard one.
Yeah.
You have one Arkham soundtrack.
I have two Arkham Horror soundtracks, custom for the game, yes.
Well, maybe I can get CPD to upload his sometime.
That would be awesome. I would love to have it. Yeah, I'm an Arkham junkie. We haven't really played a lot of it though, cause Monkey's a fun sucker. She doesn't like it.
Whatever. That again. That was one of the. That was a long time ago that we played that.
Well, we'll have to play again.
Yeah, and I really like Elder Sign. So like now I'm becoming more familiar with, you know.
You're getting into the
theme
Cthulhu
story
mythos,
story
yes.
games. I'm not a big story game person, so.
Well, yeah. I was going to say Arkham cards with words. You read a paragraph and then roll dice.
Yeah, it takes so long.
Yeah, it's true.
It is definitely an event game, that's for sure.
But, yeah, you know, I'd like to try that specific one because I've heard so much about it. You know, I didn't know what Cthulhu was 6 months ago, by the way.
Really?
I'm a nerd, but I was like a half sports, half dragons nerd. So I missed Cthulhu, apparently. And there's so much of it, and I didn't know what it was, and it's been kind of trippy to learn about the crazy octopuses and whatever the heck those things are. That's been something.
So I heard Elder Sign. What else is on your list, guys, for your spooky game?
I'd have to say Elder Sign now. I mean, that's definitely that. When did that come out? It feels like
last
it was,
year.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't know if it was this year or last year.
It was last year about this time.
Okay.
It was right before Halloween.
Yeah. I really like Elder Sign.
Yeah, Elder Sign's fantastic. I also enjoy Last Night on Earth.
Oh, yeah, that's fun, too.
Yeah, it's a great, you know, just getting into, I mean, we joke because there's so many zombie things out now, but when Last Night on Earth came out, it was only really, like, zombies and Last Night on Earth. And Last Night on Earth is just one of those games where you kind of have to just get into it, and the mechanics just facilitate this sort of cinematic experience, and you know you're probably going to die, but it doesn't matter because it's just so much fun. And we like Gloom. I know it is cards with words, but It's one of those that, for some reason, just the theme and the feel. And we don't play it a lot, but we'll probably break it out around, you know, Halloween just to get kind of a feel for it. But those are probably, you know, Arkham Horror and Last Night on Earth and Elder Sign. Elder Sign, Matt, you would probably like Elder Sign.
That's Rich Lonis, Richard Lonis, right?
Yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay. Yes.
Is that one co-op too?
It is co-op, yeah. You can even play it solo.
Okay, yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not against a gloomy theme. They just don't draw me in. So there has to be a good game there for me to enjoy it. And it's probably because I haven't tried very many. You know, I just haven't given them a chance because it's just not something that I'm terribly interested in. So if on your recommendation, I will. I'll shoot for Elder Sign as my first attempt at gloomy.
We'll check out to buying it by saying we heard it's good.
Yeah, we'll get our buddy who has all the games to buy it for us.
There you go. Yeah, go for it. It was the second runner-up for Dice Hate Me Game of the Year last year, so I'll just put that out there.
Oh, wow. Okay. There's a game there too, not just a theme.
There is a game. Yes, absolutely. There's a lot of randomness to it, obviously, because you're rolling dice and things. But there are moments where you're just like. The whole standing up rolling dice moments, you know, if you got to absolutely stand up before you roll a die because it's life or death, this one dice roll.
Yeah, I thought Richard did a really good job of creating that anticipation, which he did for Defenders of the Realm, too. I've never stood so much in a game as I do for Defenders of the Realm.
Yeah, that's actually another one that I haven't played that I'd like to. Because like you said, there's those oh moments that you want because they're fun, you know.
Absolutely.
And sometimes, a lot of times, it might be dice that cause those because of the like you said, the anticipation of what's going to fall out of your hand.
Yeah,
that's legit. I mean, that's a legit. You know, when you're walking around, you know, a place like Origins or Gen Con, and you hear tables yelling, you know, it's because somebody had a crazy dice roll a lot of times.
I mean, yeah,
there's something to be said for that.
Yeah, and that's just some people love that. We happen to be one of those people that love that. Some people are like, they just can't take the luck. It's just, it grates on their nerves. But we don't play with those people.
Yeah, I'm trying. listen, I'll make you a deal. You play automobile with me, and I'll play a crazy dice game with you.
Oh, my God. That's a tall order,
What's
buddy.
What's automobile?
It's Martin Wallace. It's a spreadsheet on cardboard.
It's an awesome cardboard. It's a spreadsheet on a spreadsheet, and it's awesome.
Yep. I love automobile because you play for 2 hours and you're like, I barely doubled my money and I won. I was supposed to have like $8 million by now. I got $4,000 and I won. Awesome.
So I'm trying to expand my mind to a little bit more luck because there are a lot of great games that provide those really fun moments that, you know, aren't dry and a little bit soulless like automobile. So I'm working on it. I'm getting there.
Well, I will do that. I will play automobile with you. I know I'll get my butt kicked because it's gonna be like playing against Sherilyn. But anything that involves spreadsheet like apparati, I know I'm gonna get my butt kicked. But it's fun anyway. I'll turn it into a social game.
There it is.
Yeah, he'll probably try and distract you from your mathematic going ons.
Yeah.
Yeah, I run my lips a lot when I'm trying to distract and subterfuge. So that's my forte.
But, got it.
All right, well, we thank you guys so much for being on the podcast. It's been a blast. I'm glad you were finally able to come and talk to us. If people who are listening want to follow you and your exploits, where's the best place to find you both online?
It's BoardGameGeek. I'm a total social networking loser. I don't have Facebook or Twitter. We have a Fleet Facebook page that's updated a little bit, but I mean, I think we're going to try to figure out. That's a very good question, Chris. I think Ben and I probably need to work on how we're going to get
a home base.
It is BGG. I mean, I get geek mails every day, and I respond to all of them. I like talking to people. You know, I don't mind at all. You can, you know, bother me anytime you want on there. As far as, like, you know, kind of updates to what we're working on, we don't have a place for that yet, but I think we're going to have to work something out because we definitely should, you know, have the ability to tell people what's going on.
I nominate you to Twitter.
Yeah, I'm going to start tweeting, and my very, very strong mental filter will not get me in trouble. So that's not a very good idea. So we'll figure something out. But I appreciate it. Right now, hey, look us up. If you want to talk to me, send me a geek mail. I'll respond. And that goes for anybody listening. I love to talk.
Yeah, you do. You're both very prolific on BoardGameGeek, and I think that's great because it's where it really is kind of where everybody rallies and talks about board games. Some people don't like BoardGameGeek, but I think it's great. It's a great place for the community, and it's a strong resource for the hobby. So all of us are on BoardGameGeek as well. You can go search for our names. You guys are obviously in the database now as designers, so you show up just like, you know, you're famous. You're super famous.
Yeah. In a small corner of the internet.
In our own mind.
Yeah.
So where can folks get their hands on Fleet?
Like I said, it's out there. I mean, it's on Amazon. So, you know, that's, I think, a Fun Again deal, where Fun Again, I think, helps fulfill that. I know a couple of the cool websites that we like, it's sold out, which is awesome. And so I would suggest go to funagain.com, go to Amazon.
Local game store.
Yeah, that's true. It's all.
We went down and got our cheesy picture. Yeah. Put it in our local game store in Detroit.
Yeah, we only have one game store in Metro Detroit, and we made sure to run down there and get a picture of it, like, on the shelf with us, like, pointing at it.
Hopefully it's not still there in 5 years.
We just want to say congrats again, and thanks a lot, both of you, for being on the podcast. We think that people are going to have a good time listening to this, and we can't wait to see you guys again. You're coming to Origins again next year, right?
I'm sure we are.
Well, my wife's sitting here, so we're going to have to pick Origins or Gen Con. Oh. We're going to go to both.
You got to go to Origins.
I like Origins. If I had to pick, it'd be Origins, but I think I'd pick both. But we'll do our best.
Okay. Well, sounds great. Well, thanks, guys, and we'll stay in touch. We'll hopefully have you on the podcast for too long again.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next up on the podcast, we're joined by fellow publishers Patrick Nickel and Michael Coe from Crash Games. Michael, welcome to the show, and Patrick, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you very much.
Hi there.
And Monkey, of course, is with me.
Woohoo!
So, for those few listeners out there who don't know about Crash Games, tell us about Crash Games, yourselves, and why you all are the way you are.
Well, mostly because I lived under power lines as a kid and was fed paint chips for a snack. That's contributed a lot to the way I am. But Michael and I met about, I want to say, almost a year and a half ago at the game store that I used to manage. And we hung out at Gen Con back in 2011. I say it like it's so long ago. And yeah. We had just a really good creative energy. We ran into each other on the first day with many people that were there. That was crazy coincidence, and I don't believe it to be coincidental. And we said, you know, hey, you know, we all felt this really good creative energy. When we get back home to Phoenix, you know, let's get together and see if we can help each other on each other's games. And that energy just was so much greater when we got back. We formed Crash Games and launched last November with Michael's first design, Rise, which is in game stores now.
Plug, plug.
Indeed.
Indeed.
Yeah.
So
you actually recently just launched your third Kickstarter project, right? Dungeon Heroes?
Correct.
Yeah, right. And I'll let Michael tell you a little bit more about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Dungeon Heroes, okay, so first and foremost, let me say there are a lot of dungeon games out there. I mean, there's a lot on Kickstarter right now. There's a lot already in print. There's nothing new about the dungeon theme, and people love it. People have loved it for a really long time. It's a fantastic theme. So what was I thinking, you know, storming up another dungeon game? Does the world need another dungeon game? You know, I'm sure plenty would argue that it doesn't.
More zombie games.
Yeah, right?
There's no zombie. There is an undead in there, though.
Yes, they are. Yes, exactly. There are some undead, and you know, and it's appropriate for a dungeon. Dungeons are great to have, you know, a little bit of that undead flair in there. But I mean, I grew up playing dungeon games. It's one of my favorite themes. You know, a good medieval fantasy theme and a nice, you know, dark dungeon is something that I've always been very fascinated with. And but lately, you know, with a pregnant wife and a full time job, I don't have a lot of time to sit down and dedicate even 3 hours to a dungeon game, let alone the 6 to 10 hours I used to dedicate to playing an episode of Dungeons and Dragons, you know. So I, but I wanted that rich experience. I was just itching for a good, rich dungeon theme and dungeon experience. But I needed something that was going to be quick. I needed something that I can just get right into, very little setup time, and play through it, easy to learn. And that's kind of what started the wheels turning. And then out came Dungeon Heroes out of that factory. So. Dungeon Heroes is it's a tile placement dungeon crawl that emphasizes on elements like deduction, pressure, luck, things like that. So it's a two-player game, but we've been getting a lot of interesting feedback of people who have kind of been playing it solitaire. And so Patrick and I have put a lot of thought into that option now, and so we're really exploring and kind of developing a solo play option for Dungeon Heroes. So we'll go ahead and call it a 1-2 player game. We're definitely making some good progress on that.
I saw you guys had some comments on that with the Kickstarter campaign, right?
Yeah, exactly. The trick is, the goal is to make sure that the spirit of the game that comes across in the two-player game is not lost in the solo game. So that's really what we're working on right now with it's like a surgeon, a fine-tooth, comb going through and making sure that we can adjust it properly, but keep it clean, keep it simple, and still achieve that spirit, So nonetheless, the game starts off, assuming it's the two-player game, one player is going to be playing an adventure party. Four heroes, very classic, nothing new here. It's a warrior, a wizard, a cleric, and a rogue. I mean, you see these in every dungeon game. So, and then they're going to be exploring a dungeon that's created by the opposite player, who the dungeon lord, he's the one playing the tile placement game. Every turn, he's going to draw four tiles from a random pile. He's going to be able to look at those, kind of plan out how he's going to lay that out. He's got options like monsters, traps, some portals, a couple of different neat little tricks, some items, and most importantly, some treasures. The goal of the game for the player playing the hero party is to get three of the four treasures that are available in the game. One of them is available right off the bat. It's on the opposite side of the board. The board is set up, I'll tell you real quick, as a 6x6 square grid. So you got 36 tiles in the center. You have four tiles as a starting row for the heroes and four as a treasure vault on the opposite side. So if one of those heroes is able to get to that treasure vault, they're going to get the first of the treasures that they need. The other two treasures are going to have to come from the tiles that the dungeon lord is placing down. And there's three in his pile. So, they're not going to have to find them all, but it's really going to be important for the dungeon lord to make sure to place those tiles, the treasure strategically. A lot of people are going to think right off the bat, oh, maybe tuck it in a corner or hide it in the back. Well, it'd be easy. Just keep it away from the heroes. But it's not that easy. There's definitely a big bluffing game that occurs because on the hero party, they have the wizard who's able to use some magic spells to reveal certain areas of the dungeon. So it's a real kind of a, one guy calls it a cat and a mouse kind of game. And, sure, to some extent, but... it's hard to explain everything in one short little way, but the game is
it's
it
awesome.
Comes into yeah.
Well, and people, you guys with your Kickstarter campaign right now, you have 39 days to go. So people, at least at the recording of the podcast, so there's a lot of information about the game itself on the Kickstarter page. So, Michael, don't feel like you got to explain every single aspect of it, because we want people to go and check it out, watch your guys' video, and learn more about it. There's been some really good comments in the updates in general that you guys have responded to on the Kickstarter campaign page.
Yeah, and people are really excited about it, because just in, we've had, like you said, two other projects. This is our third. And, inside 8 days here, we have, 208 backers for just shy of $9,000. And this is our first project where right out of the gate, we have just had an overwhelmingly positive and excited response. The other games we've definitely really had to introduce people to and really had to pound the pavement, so to speak, to really get the word out. But this one, seems to have captured people's imaginations, because they're able to have such an engaging, dramatic experience in such a short amount of time. I really feel that's the beauty of Dungeon Heroes.
Well, it's also a very approachable theme. I mean, like you said, you guys, obviously you say, well, there's nothing new as far as like the dungeon theme itself, but that's okay, because it's something that people can relate to and they can instantly know what they're in for. So Michael, when you were developing the game, and I think I got the gist of this when you were talking about it, but the theme for you really came first. The need for this game came first before the mechanics. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. You know, and like I said, I just wanted something mainstream, something simple, something my wife could pick up and play and really enjoy, and not have it last forever.
Yeah. Well, we can appreciate that too, because we have to get in and out sometimes with games that we want to play quickly, but also have it to be a more rich experience with short. And that's a hard balance to come up with in development. It's a tough line to walk.
It really is. And the thing that the magic that I feel Dungeon Heroes has is, now in my heart, I'm a Euro gamer through and through. I want to push cubes around a board for a couple hours. I love doing it. You know, Trajan, Hawaii, Castles of Burgundy, some of my favorite games. You know, but I rarely remember how an experience goes with a game like that, unless it was absolutely horrible. But with Dungeon Heroes, I'm like, oh, like today we were teaching a guy that wandered into the game store. We were teaching him the game, and he was playing the Hero Party, and I was playing the Dungeon Lord. And I put the treasures up top, trying to sort of hide them in plain sight. And he, you know, very, very blindly and taking a big chance, went across them, and he actually ended up winning the game that way. And it was horrible for me, because it was just that sinking feeling of, you know, my plan backfired. But for him, you know, he gambled and rolled the dice, so to speak, and, you know, ended up winning the game by taking a chance, you know. So he had, you know, a dramatically great experience. And to be able to capture that in such a short amount of time, I don't own a lot of games that do that. I don't know that I own any game that delivers that experience in 20-30 minutes.
And the benefit of that, and this is something that I mentioned to you in my email to you the other day, was the fact that when you play a game like that, that only lasts 20 or 30 minutes, if you have a game that's not, it doesn't go exactly as planned, like what you did, you tried something, you're more willing to take risks and try those types of strategies, because you know it's only going to last 30 minutes, and you can now jump back in and play another game within the span of where you'd only play one longer Euro-style game or Ameritrash game.
Yeah, that entry fee is very small, because you're not investing a ton of time if things didn't go right.
Yeah.
Well, you have a few other titles in development right now, right? Rancheros, Lords, Ladies, and Lizards, and Tori Neiman's Pay Dirt. Can you give us a brief rundown of those?
Sure. I'll talk about a couple, and then I'll let Michael tell you about Lords. Lords is his baby, and has been working on it for a while. It's a really big, grand game, and we're a brand new company. Rancheros is a game that I designed and that Michael and I are working on developing, and it's a game based on a couple themes of mine. And Sherilyn, we've been talking about this for a while. I had mentioned to you back on Twitter, I think over a year ago, that I really wanted to do a game based on like the Gauchos. Yeah. So, you know, I sat down one day, and I really don't consider myself a designer, because I don't have all these ideas that other designers tell me that they just come to them in droves. I very rarely get, you know, struck with inspiration, but one day I did. And so I took my very first game that I had ever designed, that was called Spiel Stew. It was very meta. It was very clunky. It didn't work at all. And then I took that Gaucho idea, and then another idea that I had really liked in games is, you know, the ranching aspect. Not literally ranching, but, you know, like in Dungeon Pets, you know, you're feeding your dungeon pets, and, you know, they're pooping all over the place, and you got to feed them, and you got to, you know, make sure they're good. I like, as a kid, I enjoyed like Harvest Moon and games like that where you're ranching. And so I kind of put all that stuff together, and Rancheros came out. So, you know, Rancheros, they're, you know, 2 to 4 players. My favorite mechanism of all time is a rondel. In the game, we have one. It's a square, so I call it a squandel. mostly to appease the detail-oriented people of the world. I won't mention Ryan Metzler. You know, people like that. And, you know, it's still in development. It's working quite well. We had it at Gen Con. We played it with a bunch of people. People really enjoyed it. But I think that it can be just a bit better. So we're not really wanting to move forward. Plus, Michael's beautiful wife is about to have a baby, so his world is about to change. So we're going to take a little bit of a break after Dungeon Heroes and relax a bit. Pater by Tori Neiman, you know, it's a situation that's really difficult for me and Michael, where our size of a publisher, you know, it's really difficult for us to produce a game of that size at this point. We got, you know, a quote back from Panda, our manufacturer, and the game is just really, really expensive. It's really frustrating because we've spent a good amount of time on it. Tori Neiman is a personal friend of mine. I game with him several times a month. And so it's kind of on the back burner. And while we do have Tori under contract, you know, we've given him permission, you know, to shop other publishers. You know, if a ton of money gets dumped in my lap, yeah, I'll publish it, no questions asked. But it's just an issue of, you know, our second project, Lost Dutchman, kind of was a rude awakening because for the longest time there, it looked like we weren't going to make it. And I don't think that people were familiar with our quality and familiar with our product enough. We had kind of, you know, had gone into that project really quickly for us to be able to go on to Kickstarter, and we would have to ask $40,000 to make Pater. And I just am not comfortable having really struggled at a $30,000 campaign to ask for $40,000.
Oh, yeah. We understand where you're coming from on that. It's tough.
Yeah, so I'm probably sharing a little bit more than I should, but that's pretty much who Michael and I are.
We
have a level of transparency where we want our fans to know, look, there are some harsh realities. I know you and Sherilyn are very familiar with them, you know, and so that's kind of where we're at
and we appreciate you sharing, especially on the podcast, because we try to have this be a platform where we can make people understand the consequences of publishing and Kickstarter and see some of the ins and outs and those decisions you have to make. So
yeah,
it's tough.
It is, yeah, it is tough. I mean, and that kind of segues right into Lords, Ladies, and Lizards. You know, when Patrick said that we had met a little over a year ago at the game store, I came in there with Lords, Ladies, and Lizards. It had been a game that I had been working on for a little over a year myself, and then he was running a game night over his store, so I wanted to bring that game in there, kind of demo it, and that's how we met. And so Lords, Ladies, and Lizards has been around, you know, for Patrick and I for the entire duration of our company. And it's a fantastic grand adventure game. It's a real festival of a lot of different elements, strategy, economics, even some politics, war, all sorts of different things, where it kind of takes a role-playing adventure and streamlines it into a real approachable, just kind of set it up and get going. You do get a small character sheet, a little bit of pen and paper involved. You get to choose between playing a lord, a lady, or a lizard. And you just go through this grand adventure trying to take on this dragon. A neat combat system that acts as a standalone card game. But it's a big box. It's a lot of components. And so it was, you know, real tricky to try and figure out how we were going to fit this into our production line. So, I mean, it's kind of fallen fate to a similar fate that Paydirt is right now, where it's something that's magnificent. Patrick and I have a lot of faith in both Lords and Paydirt. But, I mean, until we get to a point where we can kind of put some of our own money into it to help offset the difference and run a more realistic Kickstarter for it, it's just something that it falls to the wayside, unfortunately.
Yeah, and that's a real tragedy. Lords, Ladies, and Lizards, like, I know so many people throw out the word epic, and epic has become so cliche and so overused. I mean, how epic can your Egg McMuffin really be in the morning? So the word has lost all meaning and value, but I am very intentional and very deliberate when I say, you know, Lords, Ladies, and Lizards is an epic game. And I would like the record to reflect that I beat the dragon as a level 2 lizard. That doesn't mean a lot to anybody but Michael, but it's a heck of an accomplishment. And
well, congratulations, Patrick.
Thank you. I'm going to get a shirt made with some iron-on patches. I think that would be good. But, I mean, that is the reality of being a small publisher. You know, we just now have had 1 month of sales on our first game. It has taken 13 months to reach that level. So it's like we don't have, you know, the game. Like, if I had a great title like Steve Bonacore Survive or, you know, Clever Mojo's Alien Frontiers, we need that first
Dice
really
Amy
big
Games Carnival or whatever.
Right, the Carnival. You guys are rocking it. You're
I'm kidding.
Let's plug relevantly here.
And we'll all get on that train right away. But it just is the reality of, you know, of having to grow appropriately. And so it's frustrating because Paydirt is ready. Lords, Ladies, and Lizards is ready. So if somebody wants to drop off a sack of cash on my doorstep, I'm not going to ask any questions.
We'll posit that to the listeners out there right now. If you have any excess funds, sacks of cash, first of all, you can drop half of it off at Dice Hate Me at Games headquarters, and then you can send the other half to Crash Games.
We'll just take a small commission.
Yeah. Hey, I don't know. You can trust us to send you half. Let's start with Crash and we'll send you the half.
Let's work on building that circle of trust. Also, people can drop off any pork-related products on my doorstep.
Well, we appreciate you being candid, and we think that it's important for us to be open. And matter of fact, when we were just speaking with Matt and Ben of Fleet, they had asked us at the end about when Compounded was coming out, and that's something that we're going to be releasing as well, and as a news blog on the Dice Hate Me Games website, just telling people what our process is, why, you know, when we're going to run the Kickstarter, why we've made the choices that we've made, and just so people are right there with us, and the same thing you're doing. You have to make decisions, you have to make smart decisions as a publisher, and especially when it comes to Kickstarter and for crowdfunding. So,
Michael and I really look at it as these aren't just our customers. You know, these are our shareholders. These are our stakeholders. The success in Crash Games doesn't happen without these people. So, you know, the level of transparency that you guys strive for, you know, we really strive for as well. We want everything that can be transparent, you know, to be. And we'll get the occasional question, you know, that's a little inappropriate. And more often than not, we'll answer it as best we can without, you know, divulging, you know, too much. But, you know, there's not a lot that we don't share because these people on Kickstarter, without them, you know, we're just two guys with ideas.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's an amazing resource, but again, it's with people out there who are supporting you. You want to respect them and give them their due.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to take the step aside for a second, and we're going to move on to our theme for the overall podcast, and that is about spookiness. We're going, you know, because it's around Halloween. So we want to ask both of you specifically what each is your favorite spooky game.
Octopus's Garden.
Right,
I don't know.
Oh, that thing's coming at me.
Go ahead, Patrick, take it away.
Oh, you want me to go? Well, I'm sure that my favorite spooky game is going to fall into favor in the Dice Hate Me headquarters. It's a relatively new one, but I absolutely, absolutely love Elder Sign.
Yes.
It is one of my favorite games to play with a group of people. And what I really, really like about Elder Sign, it's actually all your fault, Chris, because it's your podcast that got me into the game. Before, you know, I really knew you at all, and I was just, you know, listening to the Dice Hate Me, you know, State of Games podcast. I was on my way to the game store that I managed, and you played that little clip that they play at the beginning of the app where the guy's like, "We've discovered something." You played it, and you set it up in such a way that I'm like, oh my gosh, I have got to get into that museum and help those people. And it's to me, like, Elder Sign is totally like, you know, kind of like Cthulhu meets, you know, Night at the Museum. So it has like that scary, scary thing, but a sort of, you know, a friendly scare. But if you play the app, man, that thing will scare the hell out of you.
Oh, the app's creepy.
Yeah, the app, like, I can't play it at bedtime unless the lights are on, because otherwise I've got to, like, hold on to my wife's ankle for the entire night just so I won't have nightmares.
Do you ever play Elder Sign, like the analog version, via candlelight?
No, I'm not into that creepy stuff that I see you guys do. playing Dungeon Heroes. That picture you guys took of Dungeon Heroes at that tavern with the light, that's my favorite picture of our game because that was so thematic. But no, I'm not playing that crap by candlelight. I'm going to call you guys and wake you up and make you, like, FedEx me a glass of milk and tell me a nice
That's funny. No, well, hey, I mean, I agree with Patrick in Elder Sign. That's a fantastic game too. He introduced that one to me, and I love it. I do have to say though, it's probably for me, Dungeons and Dragons, specifically the Ravenloft campaign setting. I can't tell you, you know, back when I was growing up, man, that was probably some of the best gaming I ever did. And I had a buddy that was really into playing the Dungeon Master in the Ravenloft setting in particular. And he would get it all set up. And just like you're saying, candlelight, everything. We'd dim the lights, put up some candles, put on some scary music in the background, just kind of as some like ambient music. And then he would go through and just tell this fantastic story. And so that really hits on it. To me, that would be a great Halloween experience to sit down and play that again, particularly with him as the Dungeon Master. But I mean, it's either that or, I mean, shoot, growing up as a kid, I don't know if you guys remember Nightmare, the video board game, which is like, if you were to go back and see it now, you'd probably just laugh until you fell over.
It's so goofy, but yeah, as a kid, yeah. Or, you know,
right, when I was a kid, that was fun, you know, in 13 Dead End Drive, I mean, these are, you know, grand American games, you know, it really tells of our society, but it's super funny.
You guys must have had better parents. My scare bar was pretty high, because at 5, I got to watch Nightmare on Elm Street and go to my bedroom where the lights weren't working, so, you know, my bar of things that scared me were pretty high. Like, I thought Freddy Krueger was going to kill me for half of my adult life.
And the room goes silent.
Right? And
that's like,
how did this podcast turn into Patrick's emotional trauma?
Well,
talking about spooky things.
That's right.
Carnival people that reek of cabbage.
Yeah, somebody, we got a comment about that, about Carnival. Somebody said that they felt like it was really spooky.
They did?
What?
Yeah. Do you remember that?
No, I remember people saying they wanted it to be spooky.
No, somebody had mentioned, I don't remember where it was at, either a review or maybe on BGG, that somebody had said that when they got it, they felt like it was really spooky.
That person is really projecting. Like, I could maybe see how they, with like the color of the cards, the rides sort of look washed out. So maybe it's like, you know, they're dead rides or rides from a broken down carnival, but man, they are really reaching.
Well, I mean, shoot, you could probably thank Tales from the Crypt or even like Goosebumps for that. I mean, they've definitely explored the carnival / horror theme. And
hey, Scooby Doo, man.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, thanks for sharing, guys. And again, thank you very much for being candid about what's going on with the company. We wish you guys the best. We thank you for being on the podcast, and we wish you guys the best and best of luck with Dungeon Heroes.
You're off to a great start.
To a really great start.
Yeah, we got lots of really special stretch rewards planned, and this is the first time we're doing stretch rewards, and we're really, you know, trying to put those at nice levels and really make them substantial rewards and things that people are asking for. So, you know, people get on there. Our game is super affordable. Back it, and let's hit some of those stretch rewards.
Yeah, you guys have a lot of things planned. I'm looking at the page right now. We've got $25,000, $35,000.
We got such a special one. I know it's asking a lot of people, but if we can hit over 50, and we, you know, I don't want to release the value yet, but you know, there's something that people have really, really been wanting. But that project has got to grow for us to be able to do it. You know, I won't say much, but I'll say miniatures.
Awesome.
Well, yeah, I mean, jump on. $25, you know, get you a copy of the game. And then if you want the two expansion sets, a nice bag, some collectible dice, it's only a jump of, you know, $15 to the $40 range. So we've tried to keep it real affordable to make it approachable for people. And it packs up nice. It's going to be a game that you can really take with you to work, and it's not going to take up a lot of space. So
that's one thing we were wondering when we were playing it. While we got you here, and ask you, but is it going to be – like, what's the size? What's the actual box size going to be like for
it'll
the final?
It'll be exact same as Fleet. If you're familiar with the Fleet box, it'll be exactly that. And that was a strategic decision for two reasons. Number one is a lunch break dungeon crawl, you want to be able to take that with you. It doesn't make any sense if this is a game like Twilight Imperium that you got to put it in the trunk of your car, you know, to be able to take it somewhere. The second reason was to really try to offer people as much of the stuff in the game and keep our shipping costs down so that we could offer them even more in the game. That size box fits perfectly into a small flat rate.
Yep, it certainly
so
does.
We're able to get it to international customers at a much more affordable level as well. And in response, we've had a much higher portion of our backers come from the international arena.
Well, I mean, it looks great. The page looks great. It looks like you got a lot of things to offer. So everyone out there right now, go to Kickstarter.com, search for Dungeon Heroes. Also, where's the best place? Obviously, you can go ahead and plug the Crash Games website. But where, if somebody wanted to keep up with your exploits or talk to you directly, what would be the best place to talk to you guys?
Well, of course, our website. They can sign up for our newsletter through our website, which is CrashGamesAZ.com. The AZ is for Arizona. But, you know, Michael and I do a really good job, and out of other people's mouths, not our own, of no matter how you contact us, whether it's our website, whether it's our Kickstarter pages or Board Game Geek, it is always my goal to be responding to people within the hour of when they send us questions and such. And we just had a guy today, Indie 20 Group, released a review video of Dungeon Heroes, and he's like, the guys are great. We put up a message, and within 20 minutes, you know, Twitter works as well, Facebook, Crash Games on both, and pretty much any way that's convenient for them. The number one rule for doing business is be easy to do business with. So however people want to contact us, we're there.
Yep.
Awesome. Well, we're glad you allowed us to get up in your business tonight.
I'm up in my business.
And again, everyone go check out Dungeon Heroes and Kickstarter, and we'll keep up with your exploits and keep spreading the good word.
Thank you for having us on, guys.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, guys.
Yeah, no problem. We'll talk to you soon. Well, that about wraps it up for this episode of the State of Games. But for more spooky fun, we recommend that you guys check out episode 18 of the State of Games, or as we like to call it, the one about gaming after dark.
Was that last year's?
That was last year's.
Wow.
We'll include a link to the podcast with the show notes for this podcast on DiceHateMe.com.
But wait a second. Before we take off, we'd like to recommend you to check out the Kickstarter projects for Dungeon Heroes, Salmon Run, there's only a couple of days left, and Castle Dice, which we'll be playing and Chris will be reviewing next week.
That's right. And there's plenty of other Kickstarter projects headed down the line. November's going to be very, very busy. We'll be back to talk about some of those later and talk to you about our plans for Kickstarter in the coming new year. And finally, speaking of Kickstarter, Viva Java is here.
Oh, yeah. That's right. And it's currently being delivered all around the world. We've gotten some wonderful feedback from fans already, and we can't wait for more of you to play.
Yeah, and if you missed it on Kickstarter, you can still get your hands on a copy. Simply go to shop.gamesalute.com or dicehatemegames.com or visit your friendly local game store and ask if they can order you a copy. We'll also be presenting opportunities for all of you to get your hands on the Kickstarter special promo Geekspansion that's not available for retail sale. And we'll have more on that with the podcast and on dicehateme.com soon. So, until next time, if you want to know more about us, our upcoming projects, or would just like to chat about board games, you can always find us on Twitter. I'm Dice Hate Me.
And I'm Monkey238. And I think I've made a little bit of a resurgence, but I'm going to blame it on my lack of notifications.
Yeah.
On my phone.
Boo, Twitter. Boo. Yeah. So, talk to Monkey, and hopefully you're going to get those notifications fixed, and she'll start talking more. And don't forget to check out DiceHateMe.com for an upcoming review of Castle Dice, as well as a special look at some Halloween favorites, both past and present. Until next time, this is Dice Hate Me.
And Monkey238.
Saying thanks for listening.
And may
you.